Welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. The genetic blueprint is a key component of the end product, but matching nutritional profiles to extract optimal value is critical to your profitability. Today's guests discuss considerations in feeding the PIC sow through gilt development in part one of this series. Joining us are Kansas State's Dr. Steve Dreetz, PIC's Weasley Orlando, and Marcio Gonzalez, former PIC nutritionist and founder of the swine.it platform.
My name is Weasley Orlando, and I'm a global nutrition director at PIC.
My name is Marcio Gonzalez.
Hi, this is Steve Dreetz from Kansas State University, and I'm a veterinarian and nutritionist at Kansas State, part of the Kansas State Applied Swine Nutrition team.
So the discussion today, feeding the PIC sow, how does a gilt development diet differ from a commercial pig diet?
Gilt replacement is a special category. You have to figure out that gilt to be the future source, right? So, and actually we have a couple of questions people asking, hey, how can I see this as a different? Why we have to feed? So if you figure out that gilt, I mean, market gilts or commercial gilts, need to grow fast, and you're trying to formulate your diets to grow these animals fast and with the best feed efficiency as possible. For example, you work on with particle size, maybe high density energy or high density amino acid in the diet. But gilts, this is a special category. We do not need to maximize growth. We do not need to have really fast growth. We need to have the best growth as possible. So, I mean, moving for gestation, there is probably the best diet in terms of minerals and also premix. In terms of particle size, we do not recommend to go really fine in small particle size to gestation. So, but in the end, we need to get this deal that gilt replacement is a special category, and you need to prepare a diet to have this gilt for at least 5 parrots, okay? And not only like a commercial market that with 180 days, I just sent for the slaughter, to the slaughterhouse, right?
If we wanted to maximize gilt production as far as their capability as they become breeding animals, is that the right time to start that feed change from commercial to breeding animal? Or would we be better off if we did it earlier? It's more economical and convenient if we do it at selection.
The challenge is typically gilt flows are specialized and you're isolating them to maintain their health and you're acclimating them. You're doing all these other physiologic things, and lots of times gilt barns are continuous flow, so it becomes difficult to feed a lot of different phases or a lot of different diets. We certainly want adequate nutritional program, but lots of times it's more important to understand the flow of the gilts and the management of the gilts through the system, so that what you're formulating on paper is actually what's getting delivered to the right gilt.
And some other very important aspects that we should mention is, you know, you definitely don't want to breed a gilt before 300 pounds of body weight. Ideally, you don't want to breed her after 350 pounds of body weight, because then she's too heavy, likely going to have a shorter longevity. And then you also want to have one recorded heat that you don't service her. And that should help on the future number of total born and longevity of that gilt.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, in terms of, there's 2 points on there. One is like lysine requirements. People asking us many times, hey, how about a lysine? You guys have a special lysine recommendation for gilt replacement? You say that our our lysine requirement is the same for commercial animals and replacement gilts. But the only thing that changes is the energy. We have to work with, or try to work with, low energy to have, I would say, to control this growth, or let's say to modulate this growth to do not maximize and say, I will do the best growth as possible. And so, and as Marcio commented, the target, we have to target this window or this range of weight. I mean, 300 pounds up to 350 pounds. As much as possible, we have our gilts on this window, we will maximize performance and longevity, because we know that below than this, we will actually get some negative points related with performance, reproductive performance. But I'd say bigger than 350 pounds, we also have troubles, because we get more chance to getting losses in terms of bone structures, and we also have troubles with the maintenance, and the people sometimes do not calculate this. And this is a cost involved. If you have a bigger gilts at the first breeding, you have a probability to have this animal fat or big up to parity 5 or parity when you are just sent to the slaughterhouse.
I totally agree with Weasley there that it's important to get that optimum body range in order to get those body stores for that first lactation, because that's the most challenging point probably of a sow's lifetime, is that first lactation because of her feed intake and trying to maximize nutrient intake. And so that optimum body weight range is critical in order to get that. And then the physiologic maturity of having proper bore stimulation and recording at least one heat no service prior to mating, is highly critical of for that optimizing that first litter size.
What's the most important element of this stage in that gilt's life? Is it making sure feed is there at the right ratio? Is it making sure that the right feed is there? Is it making sure that she's comfortable? If we've got a checklist of 10 things, what's the one at the top? What is it that you're most concerned about that gilt to make sure that she's ready to stay in that breeding herd as long and as profitably as possible?
I would say is that have a feed available. Do not restrict. Restriction is not good for any animals, any category, right? So, and feeding in quality as well. I mean, feeding water and water drinkers is impossible. Is really good to have the right recommendation, because if you do not have a feed, you can produce the best or design the best feed or the best diet, but if you do not have a feeder available, you have a restriction. You start to have losses, right? In terms of quality, I would say mycotoxins control is a very good point. You're talking about not a commercial gilts. We are talking about replacement gilts. It's important to make sure that you're using the best source of cereal as possible for this category.
I'd say the critical factor in gilt development is, I always term it as, from a nutritional standpoint, you know, if I'm adequately feeding the commercial gilt, like Weasley said, you know, that's more than adequate with moderate level of energy is more than adequate from a dietary standpoint. I think there's a lot more opportunities to mess things up by not, for example, giving the last gilt diet to 25 kilogram or 50 pound gilts that just got moved in, you know? So I think there's a lot of opportunities, or overstocking, and you know, the gilt flow sometimes I think doesn't receive as much attention from a management standpoint, because you have to make compromises in the pig flow, or the people in the farm have other, you know, they're focusing on making breeding target or other things. So it kind of gets lower on the priority list. So I think that's the major thing from the gilt standpoint, is everybody knows the importance of the gilt development. It's just, watching out to make sure you don't make compromises in the guilt development.
I think of it as a farming analogy. When we're going to plant that seed, the ground and the condition it's in is of utmost importance, and sometimes we don't think about that in relation to our guilt development unit and making sure that the conditions are optimal for their development.
Exactly. Everybody knows it's important, but it's the implementation that sometimes, because it's such a long-term investment and other priorities competing, that it may get overlooked.
You know, the other one that's interesting to me is that, you know, we all agree that that weight of that guilt is very important, more important than age. However, when we go to a farm, what's in the report? The age.
You know? And why is that, Marcio?
Because it's much easier to track, right?
Yep.
But is that a good enough excuse? That's the question I have.
Yeah, and if you consider that this topic, I mean, guilt and body condition probably is the, I used to say, third point in terms of piglet production. Let's consider that reproduction is the first one, health is the second. Body condition is probably the third best point to control in terms of piglet production. So I would say if you do not have good data in terms of guilt or do not control the weight in the first insemination, that would be really tough to control body condition in a sow's herd, because you have to consider that more than 20% of the herd is guilt, right? And you are always actually feeding your herd with fat guilt. You never achieve our target that I can anticipate, that is, we recommend a maximum 5% fat and maximum 5% thin cells. So if you have a big cells, bigger gilts at the first breeding, you'll be always out of this 5%.
How has your view of amino acid application changed over the last decade as you've learned more about how this is utilized? How do your guilt development feed regimens, how are they different now than they were 10, 20 years ago?
To be honest, they're not a lot different than they were 10 years ago. We've increased them relative to the productivity of the finishing pig, but basically they're the same. I probably haven't changed my guilt development recommendations in well over, I don't know if I've ever changed them.
But the pigs have changed.
Yeah, but maybe, Steve, they're talking more about maybe in terms of grams per kilogram of gain, right, Steve?
Yeah, relative to the productivity of the animals.
Yeah, that I agree.
We have changed, yes, the amino acid content there relative to the productivity levels, but our general program, we've not ever changed it in a long time.
Actually, in terms of percentage, I would say if you check 15 years ago or 10 years ago, our recommendation in terms of number of heat, weight, and age did not change. We are talking about 200 days, 300 pounds at least, and about second heat, 200 days age, and 300 pounds as a target, right? But animals are selecting today to pressure more in growth, right? Our lines, even our maternal line, we are pressuring to have a faster growth. So faster growth needs, in terms of amino acids, they need more. Not more in percentage, but more in terms of in the diet. But in the end, if you are, and the focus for guilt is formulate a diet to control the growth, right? And guilt, you do not maximize the growth, but in more fat in the diet. We try to use more fiber ingredients or ingredients that I can control the growth, right? But it's good to have our equations today that work with the growth. I mean, for market guilt, using it in a guilt replacement diet as well. But the point, as Steve commented before, early today, I mean, we do not have a 3-5 diets in a guilt replacement. And I don't think we need to have 5 diets. Okay. In my opinion, with, let's say one diet and more gestation, we can do a very good program to guilt replacement. As soon as we have the right premix and the right, let's say, phosphorus and calcium, probably we have, let's say, 80% of everything that we need to do for a good replacement program, right? Yeah. The only point maybe is a little bit concerned when you're really down in amino acid early and we are crawled in the system for or crawled in feeders, I mean, not good numbers of feeders or ventilation, and you start to see problems in these guilt flows. But not related with the diet, actually it's related constraint in the system, right?
One more thing that I was thinking here we should bring up is the crate break of the guilt, meaning, you know, ideally 2 weeks prior to mating, you want to have her in the, you know, individually housed there, you know, with their new neighbors, so they are not very scared of the neighbor there and be able to have adequate amount of feed like we talked about. And that seems to be an important factor as well in the first liter size.
Joining us on The Squeal today were special guest Dr. Steve Dreetz, along with Marcio Gonzalez from swine.it and PIC's Weasley Orlando, discussing best breeding herd nutritional practices. You're welcome to share this PIC podcast widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.